Hi, Luke and Andrew. My name is Rockwell, and I really, really like this show. So once I was just thinking about TBTL and food. Then bam! I came up with a TBTL sandwich made of tomato, bacon, turkey, and lettuce. I hope you mention it in the show. No mountain too tall, and good luck to all.
TBTL!
Who do you see when you look in the mirror?
Daffy Duck. I have a picture of him taped to my mirror.
Okay, what do you see next to Daffy Duck?
Ryan Gosling.
I'm the king of the castle, and you're the dirty rascal. Crash into me. Crash into me.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I'd rather be up here with you than down there with those teenage people with their memes and their hashtags and drakes.
We'll walk that fine line between cutting edge irreverence and trouble with the Federal Communications Commission.
Watch out for that first step. It's a doozy.
All right, good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's like someone punching your brain, but in a weirdly satisfying way.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
Hadouken!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It's a cloudy morning, but there appears to be the promise of sun out there over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. This is the last day that I will be doing the show from Burbank Springs forever. Not really. Just for the next, I don't know, 2.5 weeks, I'm going to be on a whirlwind tour of these United States. So I'm going to really just settle in and enjoy the comfortable confines of home here for the last time in a little while. I think it's going to make this show extra special, extra good. It's episode 2856 in the Collector Series.
Let the fun begin.
If you have looked in the direction of any screen, be it a television, a phone, a computer, a leapfrog, are they still making those? You have probably seen the story about this alleged college entrance cheating ring, if you will. Rich people giving money to a fake charity and having their children's faces photoshopped onto water polo players so they can get into elite colleges.
Shame on everybody involved.
Oh my God, this story just has so much going for it as a TBTL topic. And so we will dive into that today. Plus, we will do some emails, maybe even some V-mails. And we'll talk to this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's ready to laugh and drop till the socks come off. He's just here so he won't get fined. He is a handsome young stranger known as Andrew
Cobrowns
Walsh, and he joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. I realize as I activated this sound effect,
Cobrowns,
Browns in the news, my friend. Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. Why don't we have a sounder of somebody saying Browns, Browns, Browns in the news? Well, I guess we don't need.
I think we just got it.
We just got it.
Just got it.
In the clear?
It just happened.
All right. How are you?
I'm good, man. Are you excited today? Are you excited that your beloved football team made a blockbuster, or as it's called in some parts, a buster blocker trade for Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yes. I guess. Listen,
yes.
It's been well established on the show that I don't really know much about football. It doesn't mean I don't like football.
How long are you going to be saying that? Are we going to be doing the no point convention?
The no port convention?
No pert convention. Are we going to be doing the Nerm pert convention?
That was a band from the 60s, I think, right? Kind of a folk rock band.
That you were into in high school and I'm just recently getting into. Are we going to be doing Nernpernt convention in like 2040? dear God, I hope for the listeners this show isn't around in 2040. Yeah. But are we going to be doing this show in 20 years and you're going to be going, I don't know anything about football. And at that point, you'll have watched like 60 to 70 years of NFL football.
But I mean, I do think that I don't have a great brain for it. I mean, again, you can watch a lot of football. I know people who've watched tons of football, and there are some people who have brains for it and some people who don't. I have, you know, ask me what all the roles are on the defense. You know, I don't know, like, the difference between, like,
I don't know that stuff either.
Yeah.
Remember when I thought the Nickelback was because it was the player who liked the music of Nickelback or something?
Right.
And then the listeners had to.
Yeah, that was not quite right, I think, right?
And I don't even get me started on the Hoobastank defense, which I'm still trying to wrap my mind around.
That was like Greg Williams.
It's worse, though. This is not where we're trying to take this conversation, but it's so much worse when I make a mistake related to football because I think of myself as a knower of football. Mm. I have, like, I'm cocky about it, so when I'm wrong, it's extra bad. So you've very effectively insulated yourself against criticism by starting every sentence with, I don't know anything about football, but.
Okay.
It's like a very savvy approach, by the way.
Thank you. And I will say that there are probably times where I do use that to give myself a little bit of cover, or at least so that people know, like, kind of where I'm coming from on this. But I will tell you this, even if I were not the longest running Cobro of this podcast, these are the true thoughts that were going through my head yesterday as a Cleveland Browns fan who is seeing all of this news. So Odell Beckham Jr. he's got to be one of the best wide receivers in the league, right? Or at least available wide receivers in the league.
Definitely. He was really good, and then he had a kind of a up and down season last year, but so did the New York Football Giants, his team. So he's still considered to be, I would say, probably the best receiver, definitely, who was available out there for the Browns to go after.
And, you know, I don't want to get into, like, I don't want to make this a no-point conversion at the beginning of the show. So for people who don't...
What about making it an earn point conversion?
For people who don't follow the Browns, don't worry, we're not going to get too much into it. But now you know everything you need to know. There's this, you know, really good wide receiver, really good player. He was available. The Browns traded for him, and now he's a Brown. And... I don't think that's how they refer to themselves. And so everybody is freaking out. And the majority of people that I follow on Twitter are Browns related in some way or national sports related. But this was huge national sports news yesterday. And the Browns contingent, everybody is freaking out. Everybody is, as I think I mentioned to you before this show, I mean, there are so many eggs that people are counting as chickens right now. It is ridiculous. Everybody, like, people are literally tweeting out, like, retweet this if you were a Browns fan before today. I mean, people are talking Super Bowl. People are just talking about how the entire division is flipped on its head now. Which
Browns
is
Stan.
What's that?
A Stan Browns.
Did I say that?
Do you know this whole No, but you know this, like, Stan culture, whatever. It's just like,
oh, no.
It was a silly Twitter joke. There's like this whole, there's a way of being a fan of something, but it's called Stan.
Oh.
I don't even, to be honest with you, I'm very, very light on the details, but like if you'd be like, I stan Ariana Grande, that'd be a way of saying that you're a big Ariana Grande fan. Can I support your thesis here?
Yeah.
By pointing out that First Take on ESPN today under the headline, "Whoa, Dell," and then a picture of the Cleveland Browns helmet, a Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. Are the Browns Super Bowl contenders?
Oh my God. And these are not even the Browns stands, I guess.
Partisan.
If we're going with that.
They do not stand Browns.
They are, I mean, they want clicks, they want hot takes. But anyway, I just think that, like, there are, here's my bottom line, like, that this could be really good or it could be bad. I mean, every single player on a football team is like one injury away from not playing the rest of the season. Like, I'm not trying to like jinx us or be super negative, but like everybody's freaking out. Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr., Jarvis Landry. We have all. They're saying this is an unstoppable team. I'm like, yeah, but like Baker Mayfield could get hit on the first play of the season, get knocked on his ass, and hurt himself, and not play any more snaps. Hopefully that won't happen, but like you just can't count on anything. And also, you know, with OBJ, like he seems like he's, you know, He's a big personality. Who knows what happens when he comes into a locker room full of young people who are making their names and you know, and Jarvis Landry. Of course, I think him and Jarvis Landry are friends from teammates from college. But you just don't know all of the unknowns, not to get all Rumsfeld on this, that everybody who's just, like, so excited about this, yet...
It's contagious, bro. Like, it's really contagious. It's contagious.
Sorry, I cannot miss a chance to play Jarvis Landry saying it's contagious, bro.
And here's my last point on this. I'm not saying that the Browns fans who are freaking out and are, like, treating yesterday like we won the Super Bowl, that they're wrong. Like, being a fan means being irrational and having a good time. And, you know, it's just sports. It doesn't matter. Like, have fun. And in a certain way, I wish I were having more fun alongside with them. But... as somebody who doesn't know the ins and outs or what it's going to look like when he's here, I'm just like, I don't know. We'll see. The Browns have destroyed me year in and year out for so many years. Last year was, you know, last year was a good year and we didn't even win half the game. So, you know, let's see. I'm cautiously optimistic. This could be great. I can't wait for football season to begin, but I cannot get on board with this. Like, look out, world. Here come the Cleveland Browns. We still... do not have a winning season going back years and years.
I think that you guys are as fans, as stands to Cleveland Brown. By the way, I just did a little quick while you were talking research. It would appear that the name Stan, it's a kind of like a play on the Eminem song Stan. Because, you know, there's the guy right. who's writing Eminem these like obsessed fan letters,
right?
And then Eminem is rapping back to him, "Dear Stan." So like. If you stan the Cleveland Browns, if you're a stan for the Cleveland Browns, you're like an obsessed fan. I just wanted to clarify that. But I think that you Cleveland stans, I think that you guys really deserve to have some of these irrationally exuberant days. You know, like it's been a long time, and it's been a lot of bummer days as football fans for you. So I think it's cool, even if it doesn't come together, even if they don't make the Super Bowl with this team, even if something terrible happens, it's going to happen. But, you know, enjoy the rampant speculation about how good this team is going to be would be my unsolicited advice to you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel what I feel, you know, like we'll see. I mean, we'll see. I'm excited. I'm excited to watch football games with these. With this team, and we'll see. And hopefully I will be exuberant. Maybe I'll be rationally exuberant by week three. Let's see.
Possible show title. We're really kicking it old school with our references. You were talking about unknown unknowns, yes. And known unknowns.
Yep.
And then irrational exuberance. Who's that for to make it a true daily double? Who talked about irrational exuberance?
It was
in the 90s.
The Fed chairman, right?
Yes, absolutely. Alan Greenspan.
Greenspan, right.
A.K.A. Alan Greenspan.
Not bad. Clarinet player, by the way. Did you know that? Went to like Juilliard or something like that. Yeah, he was supposed to be a clarinet player, but he got into banking? I don't know.
Quantitative easing? I don't even think that people talked about that people didn't use I don't think they used the term quantitative easing when Alan Greenspan was. I'm just going to keep pushing that as a joke. Mm-hmm. I'm just so proud of. First of all, I've been seeing this Stan thing on Twitter for so long, and I never took 2 seconds to just Google and now it like makes perfect sense. So I'm sorry, I'm kind of having a moment over here. Do you know that feeling of just like something bubbling up on the internet and. In a meme form, and you kind of don't know what it is, and you kind of don't want to put in the time to figure out what it is, but it just keeps coming back. And then when you finally do get the origin story, you're like, it's almost like it's like you popped a pimple or something. It's like a big relief.
Yes, it always happens. I think I'm a little bit more stubborn with that stuff too. Not always. I'm not trying to be like willfully ignorant about what's going on online. Some of it's pretty clever, but sometimes like it takes like 100 times of me seeing it until I finally notice that I'm seeing the trend, and then I'm like, I don't know what that trend is, and then I think, oh, I'm not going to use it anyway, it doesn't matter, and then by the time I finally break down and look it up, everybody's moved on to something else anyway, and then I'm like, oh, I guess I always feel a little bit like I should have looked that up earlier because now nobody's using it anymore and it's pointless anyway.
Hey, speaking of popping a pimple, Andrew, I've got a bit of a situation, and I think you're probably the absolute last person that should advise me on this. So let me ask you, should I watch a YouTube tutorial on how to do my own makeup before I go on this trip where I'm going to be filming all this stuff? I'm doing a profile of the comedian Kathy Griffin. I guess she has a new film out. So I'm going to hang out with her and interview her on Monday in L.A. This just kind of came together yesterday. And I'm doing Wait, Wait in San Diego tomorrow. That is not filmed, thankfully, but it is in front of like a lot of people. And then I'm doing more television stuff. I'm going to go to New York next week and do more interviewing and things like that. Most of which, anyway, features a camera being pointed at my face, where I currently have two really pronounced pimples, or the remnants of two pronounced pimples right in between my eyebrows. Mm. Like, I was tempted to, like, try to draw on a little extra eyebrow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I were Anthony Davis, the basketball player for the Pelicans, who kind of looks like that mean baby from The Simpsons that has a unibrow.
Okay.
If I had a – this would be the only time having a unibrow for me. It would be a really good look because the zits are where I have no brow. Remember I said on the show a while ago that, like, I don't know what is going on in middle age for me, but if I get, like, a pimple, which I should be past that. Your body should be, like, hair falling out. Pimples are not happening mm-hmm. anymore. Like, your body should just get it together. While you have a thick and robust head of hair and you're full of youth and vim and vigor, okay, fine, a couple pimples, you can get away with it. But then as your body, I'm like, practically low T now. My body is breaking down. I am shuffling towards the grave. Why is my body still making pimples? I don't understand it.
Yeah, but now it's like you get pimples and you cry about it. That's like the sad thing.
Exactly. I'm going to talk to Dr. Arakaki and see if there's some way that I can get some help with this. I'm tired of being such a low-T stan. That's not how you use that. Give myself a quiet ding there. Anyway... the thing that happens now is when I get a pimple, it lasts forever. So I got these, and I also get like a cluster of them now. So I get one pimple, and then I know, like, oh, okay, you're planting the flag, and the rest of the exploratory party is coming right behind you, buddy. And that's what happens. So I have these two pimples, and I have to be on camera a lot. So I've been dousing the pimples with this stuff you and I were talking about, because it's also a wart treatment. The effective ingredient is salicylic acid, but it's also something you use on warts. It's basically just like an acid that kind of is supposed to burn off layers of skin. So I've been putting it on left and right, but I don't know if it's really helping or hurting the situation, because I still have the pimples are gone, but now it's just the aftermath. So the other day I tried to put some cover up on them just to see what that would look like,
mm-hmm.
and it looked worse,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know what I'm doing with makeup. And so this was a thought that literally went through my head yesterday. I'm going to be going and doing this shoot with Kathy Griffin. She is a controversial but still big television and media star. She will, I am sure, have her own makeup person there. This is kind of typical when I do these interviews. A lot of times, if the person is a celebrity of a certain note, particularly in my experience, if they're a female celebrity, they will have their makeup person come. I don't know who pays for it, if it's CBS or if it's them, but they want to get it just right. I was wondering if it would be weird if I asked Kathy Griffin if I could have her makeup person just do a quick pass on my zits. Is that over the line?
Wow, I don't know. I mean, I can't – I have no idea what the vibe in those situations are. Obviously, I
Me
can't
either.
Answer that. Yeah. What if you just asked Kathy Griffin to do it for you? You bring your own
it
makeup
would be
and just
humanizing.
Hand it to her. Yeah.
Don't you think if there's a person who would like – if there's a person who would probably go with it, I bet you it would be her. I bet you it would – much like me telling Wolfgang Puck or asking him if he has imposter syndrome, it might be a way of me quickly indicating to Kathy Griffin that this is not going to be your typical TV interview. Do you think Mario Lopez rolls in and asks Steve Martin to help put some cover up on his zits?
I hope so. You could ask. I mean, you could just, you don't awesome have to ask role. Her to put cover up, but you could say, do you have any advice for this?
Well, advice is fine, but what I want is some corn silk or whatever they're using right. these days. I want something on there. I want to not look like I look right now. And I also feel like the more I stress out about it, the worse I'm yeah. making the situation, because, of course, that's a whole thing.
Yeah, that's
so then the other thought I had was maybe – because here's the other thing. It's – you know, I don't want to make too much of this, because these stories, these TV stories, I'm on camera actually very briefly in most of them. It's really about the whoever I'm interviewing or about the particular topic, and I'm kind of – I think I am way more aware of my 20 seconds of screen time than anyone else is, of course. So if I'm, you know, 10 pounds heavier than I want to be, or if I have a pimple or whatever, I really notice that stuff. And I don't think anybody else really cares about it that much. So I don't know. One of the things I thought about doing was just trying to teach myself how to do my own makeup, because I guess this is my point. I've been doing this for a few years now, and I have never once worn makeup for any of these things. And I don't want to have like a lot of makeup on, but just a little bit. Like, is it silly for me to be like, point the camera at a person who's in full makeup and then point the camera at me and let's see who looks weird? Like, there's a reason why you wear makeup when you're on camera. And maybe I don't know. Maybe I've been doing myself a disservice. Maybe it's time for me to sit down and get my YouTube tutorial on. Like, I saw a young woman in the airline lounge the other day doing. Did we talk about this on the show?
Yeah.
I tweeted about it. On my way home from somewhere, I was at SeaTac. I was in the Alaska Air Lounge, and there was a preteen watching makeup tutorial videos on her phone, did not have headphones on. And she was skipping through the tutorial by touching the screen of her phone with a crumpled up pancake.
Ooh, while she was eating it?
Yes, because there's a pancake machine in those Alaska Airlines lounges, which is pretty friggin' cool. I'm not going to lie to you. And this particular gal, she didn't put anything on her pancake. So she had made four or five pancakes. She was eating them just dry by hand, while she's watching this on her phone. And then occasionally when she got bored and she wanted to touch the screen like you do on Instagram to go to the next thing, she would just do it with the pancake.
Didn't Julia Roberts do that in Pretty Woman? Wasn't there a whole thing she eats her breakfast breads? Have you gotten to the breakfast breads part of Patriot yet? Does that mean – I can't remember if that's season one or season two. Okay, great. You know how they just take a phrase in that?
Is it where –
It's not. I don't want to spoil the scene, but they'll just take a phrase and a character will say a phrase, and then it'll just keep coming back.
What's and it? It'll be with all the fixins or whatever. I'm to the part that you're talking about.
Yeah, he just says we're gonna have the whole spread. You know, muffins, breakfast breads, etc. He just keeps saying that phrase over and over, and now I just keep on thinking breakfast breads, etc. But isn't there a Pretty Woman scene where it's like, look how cute she is? She's nibbling on a pancake or some other breakfast bread, etc. But not using utensils. I think that's kind of a famous scene, right? And it's kind of like, oh my god, look at her, she's so random.
I think that I just remember that being the movie where he closes a jewelry box on her finger and then she laughs. Isn't that what happens in that movie?
Yeah, you and I were not. Oh, here it is. I found it here. What is this breakfast bread that she's eating?
We are not the target demo, maybe.
Yeah,
for that
given
movie.
Our age, especially, what is she eating? I can't tell. Julia Roberts' croissant mysteriously becomes a piece of pancake. Oh, that's right. Another reason this is famous is
continuity error.
It's a continuity thing, too. She starts by eating a croissant. Is that how you say that? Mm-hmm. And then they cut back to her, and she's eating a pancake in her hands. So anyway, let's do this. Let me just I'll give you 1 minute on this and see if we can solve all of your problems.
Hey, guys. So in today's video, I'll be showing you how to cover up acne and blemishes and all those things that everybody hates, but we're all getting them on our faces from time to time. So my skin is breaking out crazy lately, and I don't have an idea why. But I decided that now is a great opportunity to show you guys how I cover up my blemishes. I don't really have active pimples at the moment. It's mostly a pimple that made its cycle, and now it's just some red spots. But
no, actually, it's very much what you're dealing with here, because she's got
mine is not in its active cycle.
Right.
It's just some red spots. No, this is – thank you.
Yeah,
this is very relevant to my interest.
Give it another 30 seconds.
It's annoying, and I don't really want to have them here, so I'm going to cover them up right now. And I hope you guys learned something new today. I hope you find this video helpful, and without losing any time, let's go ahead and get started.
Just get to the point. Are you excited about Odell Beckham Jr. or not? I hate these long build-ups into these shows.
Are you going to finish that croissant?
There, I gave you time to find it.
So before we get started, I just want to tell you guys that it's very important to take care of your skin before applying any makeup. One thing that I find that makes a huge difference of how my makeup looks is exfoliating. I'm exfoliating my skin twice a week, that's pretty much enough.
I have not exfoliated
enough,
easily 20 years.
This is an 11-minute video. We just watched the first minute of it. Maybe she'll get to some more expedient things. Because right
you
now,
send me
like,
a link?
Sure. For everybody who wants to know, this is Denitslava Makeup. You can find her channel there, Denitslava, if I'm saying that correctly.
Okay, please send me the link because okay. I will legit watch that. Okay. Because, like, I'm going to have to do something to address this situation. And if I – like, my one attempt at it was, like, pretty unsuccessful. So I feel like I – and then – but I may open a whole new world for myself. Like, I may be able to sculpt myself an actual jawline. What does Liz Lemon say to Jack McBrayer's character, Kenneth? She says something like, "I will cut you a chin."
Right. I forgot about that.
She's mad at him.
Could you see a future where you're actually – where the worm has turned and you're actually giving makeup tutorials on YouTube for like middle-aged
100%.
Guys?
100%. Yes. Well, I mean, honestly, why should traditionally female – not always, but why should traditionally – should it be females – get to make their faces look more pretty if they choose to? God, this is just going to get so complicated so fast, but go with me. Like, it's not, you know, widely an accepted thing. Like, if I, as a 42, soon to be 43-year-old guy, if I had just like a normal kind of business, you know, office job, if I came in and I had was wearing makeup, like a noticeable amount of makeup that was making my features look nicer, it would be most people would probably go, okay, Luke's got makeup on today. But it's like, yeah, maybe I want to look pretty. Maybe I want to look nice.
Well, I think you're in a good position to do that. I mean, you're not walking into a piping office every day to talk about the structural dynamics of flow. Can you tell?
Yeah.
I'm a little obsessed. You know what I mean? Like, you're in the arts. Like, you can do what you want. Nobody's telling you not to, and I think
that you
could probably get away with breaking some cultural norms more than other people. Be a trailblazer.
All right. Well, it starts here.
Yeah.
It starts here with us playing a makeup tutorial on the show that is of almost zero use to the listeners because it is, of course, notoriously a visual medium. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, let's talk about this college cheating story and emails and vmails, and we'll thank some donors of the day as well. Coming up on TBTL.
Cold rice, cold rice, cold rice! Ah! Shot the needle down, hear how it sounds when it explodes on the holy ground. Got the needle right in the twilight. All the ladies and the dudes are looking just right. Got the needle now, yeah, we'll show you how.
Who is this? I want to make sure I never listen to them again.
I was going
to
say, you're probably going to hate this. I wasn't even sure if I was still going to like it. This is The Makeup. Did you listen to The Makeup at all? They were like one of those, they were like a DC area, like kind of, I guess, kind of like punk, yeah. Like kind of funky punk is, I think, how they, there was a band called Nation of Ulysses. Do you remember Nation of Ulysses? This was a band in D.C. that
broke
up. No,
I identify those as words.
Okay. Anyway, so that's who it is. You would not like Nation of Ulysses or apparently The Makeup.
I don't hate, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think. I don't think I hate punk music as a genre. That particular, if every song is that guy kind of, you know, he sounds like Missy Elliott. When I come up in the crib.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Like, I'm a bad mamma jamma. Like, that's a little got some Missy going on. But you know what? Speaking of hip hop and the DC punk scene, you know who seems to keep coming up in hip hop songs? Fugazi. Although sometimes
really?
Said as Fugazi. I know people rapping and rhyming and using the word Fugazi or calling it Fugazi. I have heard Fugazi referenced lyrically in like two hip hop songs recently.
Well, I don't know. Does Fugazi mean something that the band is named after? That's I always assume question. That it must mean.
I actually never even. I never even thought about it to that degree. And you're right. Fugazi could have a meaning outside of the DC punk band. That would be much more logical than a bunch of random hip-hop guys are really into Fugazi now.
Oh, you know what? Okay, so I'm not finding an actual definition. So I don't know if it was a word before the band. But in Urban Dictionary, it means fake or false, which is something that oh, and it looks like it comes from, like, Italian slang. But that would totally make sense in the context of a hip-hop song.
There's a future song where he talks about Fugazi, and I was like, and of course, it's just some other, you know, it's some other use of the word than, like, he's an Ian MacKay stan. Isn't that the name of the guy from Fugazi?
The guitarist.
I'm going to start calling it Fugazi now. Were you a fan of that band?
Fugazi? Yeah. That was another band that, like you, I was kind of scared of. I heard the name, and I just thought that they were just like metal or something. And then in college, oddly, my friend Greg, who I guess this isn't coincidence, it's the reason we're talking about it. He was the makeup and Nation of Ulysses fan, and he was also a big Fugazi fan. He's like, no, I think you would like this. And turns out I did a great deal. I don't listen to it that much anymore because I'm not really in that mindset. But no, like Red Medicine is a fantastic record. I mean, a fantastic damn record.
Is it what I think of when I think of punk music, or is it more like melodic and layered? I feel like I haven't listened to very much Fugazi. I've heard about it. Generally, it's grouped in with other bands that I'm not like hugely into, so I've kind of just dismissed it. But maybe I should.
I don't think that it's not something of all the music in the world. It's not something that I would recommend to you. I don't think it would give you necessarily good feelings. Their early stuff is more straightforward, kind of, you know, kind of good, a little bit more kind of guttural and straightforward, a little garagey. By the time you get to Red Medicine, they're a little bit more sophisticated with their sound and a little bit more experimental sounding, but also somehow, I don't know, relatively accessible, but still, you know. I just can't see you, like, floating in your pool, chilling out, listening to, you know, Do You Like Me by Fugazi.
Yeah, that's a good – okay, well, you've got me – this is going to sound like I'm being sarcastic, but you really have me figured out. That's exactly – like, I don't think I've been able – I'm not shitting you. I don't think I've been able to really try to figure out what the organizing principle of the music I like is, but I swear to God, it's like – I mean, occasionally I like an upbeat number because maybe for exercising or feeling pumped up in some way. But mostly I want to be able to float in a pool and listen to music. That's kind of that's sort of the standard for me. I'm not kidding you. I will get, you know, again, I will put on music that is not Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass occasionally. But if I can float in a pool and enjoy it, that's going to be music that's going to be for me. That's what I need. That's the eye of the needle I need to pass all of this music through.
Yeah, because it's you floating in your pool is a mood. It's not always a
big
reality.
Mood.
Right, exactly.
Oh, well, let me Google what big mood means. I'm trying to get on that meme.
I think it means fake.
I can. what do you want to do for our donor of the day? Thank you, music. Should we
do
go with the standard?
Fugazi? No, let's go do the standard.
Is there a Fugazi song?
I'm looking at this. I just don't think any of it is going to be. I want to so bad. What I want to do is let's just end the show so I can just go in the other room and listen to Red Medicine. How about we do that? No, let's not do that.
Yes.
Let's go. I love our thank you music.
Oh, I thought you mean like literally end the show right now. I thought you meant let's do it at the end of the show musically.
No, I meant let's just end the show so I can go in the other room and listen. I don't know why I don't want to listen to it in this room. No, you know what? Let's do the Shirelles. I have it right here. I'm going to play it if you don't mind.
Okay.
Because this,
fire
I love
ready.
The beginning of this too.
I really never get tired of this song. And I never get tired of these beautiful donors of the day. I mean specifically these names I'm about to read, but more generally just the fact that people donate to TBTL is amazing. Amazing. I mean, this is the place you turn for hip-hop news, for memes well after they've expired and have stopped being relevant. What else? Makeup tips.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much not here for the listeners. And yet people donate to the show. They keep it going. People like Elizabeth Jacobson of Federal Way, Washington. Darren Lone Fight of Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Jeff Morgan of Waterloo, Iowa. And then check this out. Tamara Morgan of East Randolph, Vermont.
Two Morgans.
Two Morgans from different cities.
But both alike in dignity.
I don't know that. Is that a Fugazi lyric?
It's a Romeo and Juliet lyric.
Well, la-ti-da. Wait, that's from the actual play,
the
Romeo
line?
And Juliet?
Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. No?
Wait, hold on.
I had to memorize
you know
it
that
at some
kind
point.
Of stuff?
I had to memorize it at some point.
Were you in Romeo and Juliet?
No, I think I just had to memorize it like in a class. I'm looking it up because I'm probably messing this up. Let me see here. Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge, break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. Used to have that whole prologue
that
memorized. Well, the second one I was reading.
My brain
it.
Is always pushing information out to make room for new information.
Right. Dude, that was, I'm like borderline attracted to you right now. That is cool.
Well, that's why I memorized it.
That's like when Bradley Cooper slipped into doing an interview in French. I was like, okay, I get it. I get it right now about Bradley Cooper. That's cool, man. I like that you were just waiting for the right moment to deploy your knowledge of Shakespeare.
And now I'm done. And now I've got nothing more to offer the show except the fact that I want to also thank Elizabeth Jacobson of Federal Way, Washington, because I think she might have slipped through the cracks between yesterday's show.
Nope, I said her name first.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry. I only heard Darren Lone Fight. Sorry.
You were queuing up your Shakespeare line in your mind.
Right, yes.
You were like, okay, wait for it. After he says, Tamara Morgan.
I've been waiting 6 years.
To be or not to be, quoth the raven.
Oh, so you have read Romeo and Juliet. Okay, good.
I've dabbled. Sandra Vasquez of Everett, Washington. We're also thanking you. And Anthony Crunk of Newark, Delaware.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, man. Anthony's last name has really taken on a new dimension in the last few years. I wonder how that's treating Anthony.
Yeah, I don't know. What does Crunk mean, by the way? I've been using it on Twitter a lot, but I really don't quite understand it.
When something's cool, it's real crunk.
Okay.
Like, hey, check out this new Crunk Fugazi song.
Would you say that Anthony is that crunk for us? Is he
oh,
a TBTL
man,
crunk?
So crunk.
Is he crunk for
He's
TBTL?
Mass crunk, dude.
Wait, hold
Anthony,
on.
Anthony, we really
mass
appreciate
crunk
it.
Mass crunk dude is maybe a show title.
Anthony, listen, bro. If you are tired of people referencing the fact that your last name has also become a term Lil Jon uses for getting turnt, I apologize that we leaned right into that. But, you know, it's a big deal in our world. So, Anthony, thank you so much. Sandra, thank you as well. I'm going with Tamara. It could be Tamara, but I'm gonna say Tamara. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say Jeff. I'm going with Jeff on this one. Darren, and then Elizabeth. I'm going with Elizabeth for the first donor of today. Thanks, y'all. Thank you so much for making TBTL possible. Couldn't be here without you.
But everything's gonna be all right. Thank you, baby.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story today, this alleged college admissions cheating scandal. Which I don't know to what degree I need to explain it to the listeners because they're probably up to speed on it. It has been seemingly the only thing. I think we're all just really happy to have a scandal that doesn't involve the current president, at least directly. Although, if you don't think that guy who's legally trying to suppress his transcripts and records, if you think he didn't benefit from some similar BS, I got a Fugazi CD to sell you. But anyway, a lot of Fugazi talk today. I apologize.
I'm just trying to figure out if you have a fake CD or a CD with Fugazi songs on it.
Right. I guess the premise of that would be that people don't have CD players anymore. You know, I got a, what was it like? People would say, I got a bridge to sell you.
Right, right. Or some, I have some oceanfront property in Arizona to sell you.
Right. I'm, by the way, really close to closing the deal on that. And it is
going
to be amazing when they develop it. Yeah. Scottsdale Beach.
Oh, wow. Oh, I wish you had talked to me about this.
Well, you know what? There's still time for you to get in on the investment.
Well, no, that's not what I want to talk about. You know what? I think legally I'm not allowed to give any kind of financial advice on this show, as you mentioned during the Robin Hood ads. But let's talk afterwards, because if you haven't signed the bottom line yet, I just might want to kind of take a look at some of the details of this agreement, make sure that, you know, you're getting the
best deal. I'd love to talk about
this
on the show, but the issue as I see it is, if I talk about it on the show, all the listeners are going to buy property at Scottsdale Beach, and there's just not enough property to go around. This is only for people who want to take control of their future and really, truly financially succeed for them and their children. And I'd love to be able to offer this to all the listeners, but it's just a select few. I'll have a kind of a session going on at the Airport Hilton on Saturday. Me and Dr. Arakaka will be there explaining how you too can fix your low T at Scottsdale Beach.
Well, listen, I don't want to fight with you about this, but all I would say is say hey to John Curley for me. Thank you.
The story on this is that the government alleges that there was this guy who was kind of a college admissions guru gone rogue. His thing was he would sort of help guide your kid in through the admissions process and put them in the most positive light so they could get into a college. Generally, these colleges that we're talking about were pretty hard to get into: Yale, Harvard, USC, which, to be honest with you, no offense, but Will Ferrell went there. It doesn't seem like we have listeners that like went to USC. We had a listener who was a professor at USC for a while. So no criticism of USC, but it's just like, as somebody wrote on Twitter, how are you rich and not able to get into USC?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the whole, as I understand it, one of the main premises or one of the main things about USC. And again, I went to a state school that was, when I went there, not hard to get into at all. I did not have remarkable grades or remarkable test scores. I just was just less competitive then. So I'm not trying to – none of this is about besmirching any of these fine institutions. But also, University of Texas was on the list. Again, it's like, how much are you going to spend to get your kid into University of Texas? Matthew McConaughey went there. Like,
and
it has to be
– he's super successful. So is Will Ferrell.
Thanks to
their education.
I'm not saying that these parents were in the right. They're really not. But, like, if you're going to spend all this money, I think to some degree, because you want to brag about where your kid went, aim higher than University of Texas. Like, again, fine school, but I would put it on the same level as, like, the University of Washington, where I went. So, anyway, the parents apparently or allegedly wrote these checks to this fake nonprofit that this dude was running. And now this is where things get really interesting, because the alleged scheme was so involved. Apparently, the kind of, as the New York Times described it, the less well-known sports, things like sailing and water polo and to some degree volleyball, the sports at major universities that are basically not football or basketball, they have an allotment of spots for athletes that, you know, would be members of their teams that do not have the grades to get into the school. And so what this guy had apparently figured out was that some of these sports are so obscure that the admissions people would not know if your kid is like a top fencing prospect. Mm-hmm. So he would have the parents go and take pictures of their kids sometimes, pretend doing the sport, the semi-obscure sport in question, or sometimes he would just Photoshop their faces, the kids' faces, onto people doing these sports. And then in one case, the Stanford sailing coach, which is, I wrote on Twitter, I found the whitest sentence ever written, and it was in the New York Times, and it was, the Stanford sailing coach was fired. They, like, in some cases, the coaches of these semi-obscure sports were actually kind of in on it, where they would basically, like, let someone pretend to be the 14th member of the Stanford sailing team so that they would be able to get into Stanford kind of on a lower with less good, if you will, grades and test scores. Sometimes this guy would, like, pay other people to go take the tests on behalf of the students. There was just a whole variety of scams that he was allegedly running. Of course, it's got a lot of attention because there were famous people involved, Felicity Huffman, and maybe we think William H. Macy, although Felicity Huffman, she's the only one named in the indictment. And then the woman who played Aunt Becky on Full House, Lori Loughlin, I think is maybe her name. Her daughter was... apparently she used this scam with her daughter to get her daughter into USC. And I'll mention that I watched a video of her daughter, who is, of course, an Instagram influencer all on her own. And her daughter is in her dorm room at USC. It's a sponsored piece of content by, like, Amazon. And she's talking during her sponsored Amazon video. In other words, they sent her all the stuff to trick out her dorm room. And then she records a video about how great it is, and then Amazon pays her, or maybe just pays her in the stuff. I don't know the exact business deal. The daughter literally says, I'm not that into college. She says this from the dorm room.
Yeah, no, there's all kinds of people have dug up all of these tweets of the daughter. Like, I hate school. Like, literally just, like, tweets upon tweets of how much she hates school. And then a bunch of these photos and videos of her being an influencer in her dorm room. That, to me, is... Yeah, that's the kind of delicious part.
She says, in one video I saw, she goes, you know, I'm going to be going to Fiji for work and New York for work. And all of this, I presume, is some kind of Instagram-y influencer kind of thing. I don't think she's going to Fiji to work on figuring out how to have a sustainable water supply in Fiji or something. Like, I think she's going there to take pictures on the beach, presumably. But she goes, but I do want to be in college because, like, I want to do tailgating. She literally says that. Like,
you're right. No, I mean, you got to have priorities, certainly.
So anyway, this has lit my Twitter feed on fire. It must have to do with the kind of the pool of Twitter that I'm treading water in. Like, it's mostly people that went to college. It's all people who have strong thoughts about, you know, the system being rigged and where they fall in the system. Like, it feels to me like the people that went to good schools are using it as an excuse to mention that they went to good schools. It feels to me like the people who didn't go to college are using it as a chance to point out that college is bullshit. It feels to me like, as a person with major class issues, I wrote a silly joke, which was this is my version of all of this. So the people that went to Harvard are like, the joke is like, I went to Harvard the old fashioned way. I couldn't get into Yale, which to me smells like a person wanting to let us know they went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. But okay.
I went to school in Boston. My version of it is, well, just outside of Boston.
Like, again, I'll be totally honest, my own longstanding issues are informing my read on it. It just felt like the waves of this story, or the phases of this story, were like, oh my God, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin are, you know, what the hell? And then a bunch of memes of William H. Macy from Fargo going, heck you talking about, you know, on the phone.
My feed was just flooded with Odell Beckham Jr. news, so I didn't get to see any of these.
Oh, see? This is a good day to stan Cleveland Browns. So, and then the next phase was kind of like everybody making a joke about where they went to school. And again, in my mind, or to my eye, a kind of subtle way of mentioning casually what school people went to if they feel proud of it. I clearly don't feel proud of my school. There's nothing wrong with where I went to school. It's just not anything that would ever be a point of pride for me. That sounds very weird. I know Genevieve works there, and I think it's a good institution that does a lot of good work. I just do not take any personal pride in having gone to the college that I went to because, again, when I went there, it just was not hard to get into. And so I applied, and then I went.
Pride than I do, though. I'm sorry about that. I thought you were pausing. I didn't mean to interrupt you midstream.
No, that's fine. That's a classic. That's a classic Kent State move.
Exactly. Like, I will say that you have at least, because of the sports connection, because of your fandom of the sports, you do have
at least on the sports.
That. And like, you would wear a Huskies something probably, or carry a Husky bag, and you would identify as a Husky way more than I would identify as a Kent State Golden Flash. Legally, I'm not allowed to actually go around telling people I'm a Golden Flash anymore for some weird reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out Kent State didn't have the rights to that name. That belonged to a pawn shop in Vegas, and it's currently being litigated.
Right.
So right now they're the Kent State TBDs.
Yeah, I will say
that could be a good show title. You're totally right that I have some kind of I have some big UW energy, but it's totally sports based. It's not, and again, I don't have any problem with the school. Like, I don't think it was not a bad place for me. I don't think it's a bad place for the people that go there. I think it's great, but it's just, this is a very, very weird comparison to make, but it's also swirled around in my like major class issues and my own story, my narrative that I have created about Luke making it happen for Luke. Okay, so try to go with me on this. The same way that I just don't understand, or at least I don't, in the same way that it's weird for me to think about having where I went to college be like some point of pride for me, like something I casually or not so casually mention to people, it's the same way that I can't wrap my mind around caring what my parents think. Because, like, my parents gave me a lot of love and a lot of support in their own kind of funky way, but they never gave me any money. I've never, like, relied on them. Like, post high school, I never got anything from my parents. And the upside of that was I never, ever asked myself, what will my parents think? And that's kind of liberating in a way, because I know there are a lot of people who what their parents think about them is a major factor. And I'm not even saying that's a bad way to go through life. It's just not a way I've gone through life. And so, like, I kind of feel that way about my college. Like, I get the, alumni, letter or whatever, where it's like they want to probably ask me for a donation. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm sure there's a rich person that's got that covered. They also think my last name is my ex-wife's last name. They somehow got us in the system because she graduated from the UW as well. So, I get these letters to my first name and my ex-wife's last name, which is mostly why I'm not donating. But anyway, it's a wave for, to me, it seemed like the second wave was people mentioning that they went to, like, subtly trying to work in the fact that they went to a good school. Now, of course, my reaction to that is typical for me, which is I wrote that I wanted to clarify that when I went to the Blues Guitar for Beginners class at North Seattle Community College Extension Program, I got in 100% on my own, which, by the way, is not just a joke, but true. I did go to that class when I was a senior in high school to try to learn how to play blues guitar. That's my version of that joke because, of course, when everyone else is doing something, I have to still be part of the joke, but I have to try to do it in my own way so that I'm somehow above the joke or above the what I think of as the subtle bragging about where you went to school.
That thing that you said, anyway, back though, to the... about your relationship with your parents is honestly one of the most interesting and revealing things. Every now and then we surprise ourselves. We think that we can't learn any more about each other because we do this bullshit day in and day out. That's kind of flooring me, not even in a good way or a bad way. I have heard you talk about your education a lot. I've heard you talk about, you know, your, whatever your journey. I've heard you talk about your parents. I never kind of put it together in that way. And clearly you've done some thinking about that. I find that absolutely fascinating. And when you say that there's a certain freedom with that, that makes a lot of sense. Can we go back to your education for a second, though? And I'm not challenging you. I'm legitimately interested in knowing the answer. Do you think that you would be exactly where you are today if you hadn't gone to the UW or any school?
You mean if I hadn't gone to college, or if I hadn't specifically gone to that? Or I don't know the difference between college and a university, but
a
pretty good indicator I didn't get the greatest education. I think let's just start there.
Wait, your guitar teacher didn't tell you the difference between a college and a university? Okay, well, let's start by saying, without going to university at all. Now I'll just talk like a Brit. You went to university. Do you think that you would basically have the same life you have right now, with the exception of, well, you know, I met so-and-so in the dorms, which led me to meet this other person, and now I'm in a commercial for that person. But, like, aside from just the circumstances, do you think that the education you got contributed in any way to your current life regarding jobs and what you do for a living?
I think about this sometimes because I was so close to not going to college. Because my parents are not – they didn't go to college. They're not those kind of people. Like, I applied to that school, and I think it was literally the last day you could. And it was just like I filled out a sheet of paper and drove it over there kind of thing. So it would have been equally possible for me to just be like, yeah, not for me, or I'm going to get around to that, and then having not gotten around to it. I feel like if I would not have gone to college, I would either be – way richer than I am now. Like, I would have become like some tech disruptor somewhere, or like porn mogul, or I would have had to go completely non-traditional with my work, like some funky startup that you know, it's like we winterize RVs or something, but it's like a really successful business. And then I'd be like that guy, like, who goes to Lake Havasu and gets the jet skis out and is like kind of a vaguely, you know, Guy Fieri looking dude. Like, I would either become extremely financially successful, or I would be a drug addict living somewhere very much on the margins of society. I know that sounds crazy and like overly dramatic, but what going to college, I guess, did for me was it kind of put me into a middle trajectory. So I was then around people who were going to college and people who were getting kind of a certain sort of job on the way out of college or after college, and people who would buy houses and people who would live in certain kinds of neighborhoods and go to certain kinds of bars. And it just put me in an ecosystem that I would not have been in otherwise, because I didn't grow up in that ecosystem. I didn't grow up in a kind of like upper middle class. And that's, of course, not everybody who goes to college, but it was just – it did exactly what I think in some way college is designed to do, which is it kind of gave me more social mobility, and it put me into a group of people that I would not have really – that I didn't grow up hanging out with. So then what seemed normal to me post-college was different than what seemed normal to me pre-college. So like I think I would have had – to the degree that I have drive, I think I would have had the same drive, but it could have just taken on so many weird forms without going to – because when I went to college, what basically happened was I started working at the public radio station on campus, and then that is what set me – on the course of my life, I guess. Now, had I not had that, I don't think I would have been like laying around doing nothing, but I think I would have just been trying a bunch of weird stuff. And if something hit, so if something caught, if my RV winterizing business took off, like I could have very easily been selling Cutco knives door to door and then just become the best at that and become super financially well off because of some kind of slightly scammy sales thing. But then also, if that would have failed, I could have just descended more and more and more into a kind of the other side of life and just become like all I care about is just getting drunk and high and altering my reality because things aren't working out for me. And now, you know, everyone else in my life, and I have a specific person in mind, I think you probably know who I'm talking about, who I feel like this has sort of happened to some degree, where if all your friends and everybody else kind of moves into adult life – and they just are all doing those things and you're not, I'm the kind of person who would just probably opt out. I don't mean end my life, but I mean stop trying to compete for the, like, you know, white picket fence and 2.5 kids, I would just be like, no, I'm the diviest dive bar guy that ever dived, you know? Because to me it would be like, what I do in a situation if I feel like I'm not going to be successful is then I just totally stop trying in that situation. So that's a really weird, involved answer. And I don't know if that answered the question.
You know, you did. You did. I guess I just struggle with this. I'm not taking this to a very, I guess, fun, funny place. But so Veeves is very, very, very dedicated to the mission of her job, right? She works for the University of Washington. Yep. And the longer she's there, you know, she came from a more, I would say, elitist educational background. She went to Wellesley, which is just a really good, small, all-women's college on the East Coast. Very elite. And I think that, you know, when I met her, she's embarrassed that she said this back then, but I brought it up on another podcast, so I guess it's okay to bring it up here. When we first met, she would joke around and tease me and say I basically went to a trade school, which I didn't really care about. I don't have a super, you know, huge degree of pride in my degree either. You know, like she kind of, I think maybe at a certain point in her life that she's now pretty ashamed of, would kind of look down her nose at a little bit at the kind of education that I got, which was very practical and not elite, certainly. And now she feels very, very differently about the role of like public education. So mm-hmm. We go back and forth and we find ourselves in these little debates about the relationship between alumni and schools. We were actually debating the other day, because I guess John Mulaney has some bit where he's complaining about his school, which I think was an Ivy League school, hitting him up for donations.
Presumably.
Afterwards, yeah. I don't think it was a traditionally black college that John Mulaney went to. I don't think
so. He did not go to an HBCU.
Historically black college, right, yeah. But he's got this bit about like, hey, I don't want to give to you. I paid my way through school. I'm done. Like, yeah. It's transactional. And Genevieve believes that it isn't transactional, that the role of these universities, and now it breaks down a little bit because she's talking more in the public realm here than private schools, but that, sure, if you can give back, you should give back, because when you're donating to schools, you're giving other people the opportunity who might not have it otherwise to go and have the experience you had. And for me, it makes sense that where universities are in this day and age, that people would look at it as a transaction. Like, people are saddled with student debt, and we pay out the nose for textbooks. Now, Genevieve also used to work for PR for a textbook company, so she knows the nuances of that as well.
God,
but I understand.
Textbook.
Yeah, but I understand why when people are done, whether it's right or wrong, when people are done with their university right now in 2019, you don't feel super giving towards your university anymore. You got what you got out of it, and you paid out the nose for it, and that's kind of the relationship a lot of people have with their universities now. And anyway, having this debate and going back and forth on it, you know, I keep on thinking about my own experience in college, which I wouldn't trade back for anything, by the way. I wouldn't go to a better school. I wouldn't go to a worse school. Like, I love the experience I had at Kent State. It was also the only school I applied to. I knew I could probably get into it. I didn't care that much.
It's interesting that we
unmotivated
have that in
school. Yeah, it's a very unmotivated student, but I was also really privileged in that my parents sent me to a really good, you know, college prep high school. So, you know, I probably didn't really deserve
that. I would
really
call the
that.
Fight song medium at best.
Well, that's generous. So anyway, I'm kind of with you, like, my college experience, you know, I remember looking down my nose at some of the classes I was taking because I was working, you know, climbing the ladder of public radio at the time, and I was working around professionals who were actually in the radio field, and I would go to these classes that were just like 20 years behind the times, and professors who should have stopped teaching a long time ago. That's what it was like in the 90s when I went there. But it was everybody that I met. It was the experience. It was the soft landing. Not everybody can afford it, but I mean, essentially it was a soft landing into adulthood that, you know, it kind of took 4 years to learn how to navigate a new space. It was an in-between place between having to totally support myself and navigate the real world and, you know, not live with my parents. And if it weren't for the people I knew in college, I might not have ever started listening to public radio, let alone working in public radio. So I feel like my my college experience was invaluable and I wouldn't trade it for anything, but it wasn't necessarily the classroom stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have – here's one thing. I think that where people come down on this is probably mostly going to be the result of what – if they had a college experience, what that experience was. So I would guess that – like, look, had I gotten into – had I been the kind of kid who was motivated to try to get into a really elite school, and had I gone to that really elite school – I would probably now – well, first of all, I would probably now be much more successful than I am just because of the connections I would have made. I don't know if I would be more qualified or smarter or better, but I would – you know, I would assume that had I gone to Harvard, I would be doing something Harvard-y after school or after graduation. But I'm sure that if I had that experience, I would have one set of feelings around this. And I very well might have been the kind of person who was wanted to just subtly mention that I went to a really elite school, but that I actually got in without cheating. Like, that would have probably be an important thing for me to clarify. So I'm sure that people, and we have listeners that went to Ivy League schools, if I went to an Ivy League school, that would make me think that those kinds of schools matter and make a difference and are important. I didn't go to one of those schools, and so my opinion is they don't matter. They're not important. Like, I mean, they certainly impact the lives of the people who get to go to them. But and then also, had I not gone to college, I think I would be of the opinion that the whole thing is BS. And then what I did is I went to a state school that was 3 miles from my house. And so my opinion is shaped by that experience. I guess I just feel like I have the opinion that I have on this, but I admit that it's completely because of what my personal experience was. And had I gone to a really high end school, I might have had a different opinion on this whole thing.
As a parent of, you know, a daughter that you helped put through college, I assume, actually I have no idea if mm-hmm. you helped or what Addie's situation was for her college years. But obviously you are somebody who, you know, cares a lot about your daughter because you're not a monster. And you're also somebody, though, how do I put this? You're very Luke Burbank, right? You're okay with cutting the corners here and there if need be. You like to game the system. You want to get – you always want to you know, maybe get the secret upgrade or whatever. We talk about this a lot. I'm not using the best words right here, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, does part of you identify with this thing of being like, well, if you found out that if you know this guy and you know this guy and you can maybe, like, put a little candy over here, you get Addie into a better school, I could sort of see you maybe thinking about that for a second, too.
That's, you know, that is an interesting question because I feel like all the people who are, like, on the one hand, when I sit down and think about this, I become very furious because, as I've already said like 9 times on this episode of the show, I have huge class issues because I grew up, you know, pretty poor, and I feel like I just didn't have anybody doing me any favors. I'm also a straight white male, so I come from – it's weird because I also come from a huge amount of privilege just based on that. But sometimes when people assume that because I was a straight – because I'm a straight white male – everything was easy for me or my parents had a bunch of money, I, of course, kind of instinctively push back on that. Like, I don't know. I've had to really rethink my bootstrapping story, you know, over time, because it's not the same story in 2019 as it was in 1999, because back then we didn't talk about things like white privilege the way we talk about it now, and white male privilege and white cis mm-hmm. straight male privilege. So, like, I know that I was helped greatly by the fact that when I walked into a room, everyone didn't kind of go, well, what's this guy doing here? And when I, like, was annoyingly opinionated as a work-study student at KUOW, it was probably less threatening to people because it was coming from someone that kind of stuff typically came from, as opposed to if I was a person of color or a woman, I think the reaction would have been different. So I'm always trying to kind of figure out how much I'm allowed to, like, pat myself on the back for making it happen for myself,
mm-hmm.
taken kind of in the context of me being a very privileged person. But anyway, sorry, back to the question of would I do this for Addie? It's complicated because you do want to do – what I was saying was part of me when I read the story becomes freaking furious because I just think of this world of these rich, mostly white people just greasing each other's palms and their stupid influencer kids who don't even want to be at college, just like sitting in a dorm room kitted out by Amazon, and it just fills me with rage. That's one reaction I have. The other reaction I have is like, I kind of understand the idea of being a parent and wanting desperately to make things happen for your kid and kind of talking yourself into a situation where it's like, well, if everyone's doing it, and if this is just – like I could see the frog, the water getting turned up on the frog that is Felicity Huffman in this way. And by the way, that's a whole other – this is – I just – Twitter was really – Twitter was layered and dense and complex for me yesterday, because another wave, another phase of this story was a whole thing about like if it was somehow chauvinism that William H. Macy was not listed on the indictment – if that was progress because we didn't assume he was in charge of this as the husband and as the father, or if that was because women are always getting the fuzzy end of the lollipop, so that's why Felicity Huffman was named and not William H. Macy. I don't have an opinion on that matter. I don't know enough about the story, but that was just another like kind of like side. There was a subreddit about that basically.
Does anybody know, though, or is that all rank speculation? I have not gone deep on the story. I've read, you know, a few articles that lay out the story. But is everybody just speculating about the William H. Macy thing? I assume that it has to do with – this is my assumption and my speculation, but I assume it just had to do with what the prosecutors had evidence of and where
it's in the indictment. Yeah, yeah, exactly. To me, it was in the indictment – Felicity Huffman is named and William H. Macy is listed, I believe, as spouse or husband. And I think it's just because probably Felicity Huffman was the one on the phone with the guy or sending the emails to the guy who got arrested. And so I don't think it was anything more than that. But that's what I mean about this story. There are just so many angles to it. It's like, well, is Felicity Huffman just being punished for just being a mom, and moms are undervalued in our society and they have to do what they have to, you know what I mean? Like there's just so many waves of like outrage and people arguing with each other about how they're reacting to the story that it just, you know, I had to just like watch some Top Chef and really clear my palate last night. But anyway, back to the question of would I do this for Addie? I don't know. I could see a world in which if I had a different financial picture and Addie was a different kind of kid and she was like, I really want to go to Harvard. And it was like, well, here's what you do. You hire this, you know, admissions coach who helps you get good test scores and helps you get in. And then you hire the guy and then he just slowly explains that it's not just about sending the kid to Kumon or Stanford Prep or whatever the, you know, test service is. It's like we're going to do – there's like maybe one shady thing. Like what we're going to do is get her to join a lacrosse team. She doesn't have to be good at lacrosse. She just has to be on the team because that technically qualifies as a sport and that will help her chances. And I'm like, all right, it's weird, but okay. So we get her on the lacrosse team. And then he's like, okay, now when we file the paperwork, we're going to say that she played lacrosse all 4 years. And it's like, well, she didn't. But she's also not a lacrosse player, so does it matter? Okay, fine. Now we're going to say she was an All-American at lacrosse. Now I'm 20,000 into this, right? That's another right. thing. The real thing stopping me from doing this was I'd be way too cheap about this shit. I'd be like, Addie, get into school or don't get into school, but I'm not dropping $500,000 to get you into school, right? But let's just say now it's like, okay, we're going to Photoshop her face on an actual All-American lacrosse player. Now, this is just craziness, but I've also at this point given into faking a lacrosse career, faking, you know, it's like at what point do you pull back and go, this is madness? I can see how if you have the resources and you want this for your kid. But by the way, let me also mention this. And somebody pointed this out on Twitter. I didn't come up with this observation, but like this is as much, if not more, about the parents than the kids, I think. Some of these kids may have been very in on it. Some of these kids may have been very manipulating and conniving. But my sense is for a lot of this, parents want to be able to say to other parents that their kids are going to a good school. Yeah. Certain parents.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, you know, as much as I have like zero patience for this, for Lori Loughlin and the Massimo guy's kid. So, you know, if you went into Target and you saw any of the clothes they sold at Target, they were almost all Massimo up to a while ago when the companies parted ways. But Massimo is like a super duper successful popular clothing brand. So this kid is the child of a presumably well-paid actor, Lori Loughlin, and a super well-paid clothing mogul. Like, you know, I have zero empathy for this kid, other than to say, who knows if she, I mean, she clearly didn't want to go to USC that bad. She kept saying it on the videos. Mm-hmm. So how much of this was her mom and dad wanting to say to people that their kid goes to USC? I don't know. I wasn't there. But that's another weird dynamic of this, is how much of this is parents trying to just do better for their kids, and how much of it is parents just trying to have a brag up something to brag about.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a really good point too. The status of college and everything that goes into this. Now, I will tell you what I've decided to do as far as we're concerned is Photoshop our heads. I have a high school photo of both me and you from those stickers we made, and I think I'm going to make us tennis players for a show pick today. Is that okay if I put you and me on tennis player bodies and then see if we get into a better podcast?
Could you? I think it'd be, just from a photographic standpoint, I don't want to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. I know that you run a very successful Flickr page mm-hmm. based on photography.
Oh, yeah, right.
I think if we were, first of all, one of the things that was actually used was crew, okay. Like rowing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can both be in the picture, because if we're tennis players, we'd be very far apart. If we're playing, are we?
Well,
playing
I got
each
a
other?
Photo here. I got a photo here of two men. They're probably famous. Let me actually see. One of them is Gardner Malloy. Do you know who that is? I think
tennis player.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So I'll send this to you. But it's two nice. Tennis players, probably in the 1940s. It's a black and white photo.
Oh, good. Okay.
Both holding rackets, like kind of arm in arm, sort of.
Nice. Can you process our faces so we're in black and white too? So
yes.
It'll be really convincing.
I'm actually going to use your good. Black and white high school photo, and I'm going to black and white mine up, and then
perfect.
There we go. So
I think that's a great
that's
idea.
The important thing. So. As usual,
yes.
I will provide
I like
the power out.
So anyway, I don't have a great power out to this, other than to say it was what was interesting to me, along with just like the weirdness of the story, was how I could look at my Twitter feed and there could be 30 tweets in a row that were about this. So clearly this – I started the conversation by saying this, but clearly something about the overlap of – like I don't know if I were a – if I were a MAGA person, would this be 100% of my tweets? I don't know. I don't really know how it's playing on the other side. I don't kind of want to know, honestly. But it was just – it was an interesting – it was almost like a weird insight into the people that I'm virtually hanging out with, because it was just like – It actually started during our show yesterday, and I didn't know what people were tweeting about because I didn't have the context, and it has just not stopped since. And it was like, okay, this indicates something about the kind of people that I'm virtually hobnobbing with, because it was just everywhere. It dominated every single online conversation I read yesterday was about this.
Well, don't do it, Walsh, because I have like kind of this somewhat confused slurry of thoughts about this that I'm having. No answers, just thoughts. But I haven't been inundated with it as much as you have. But clearly I've seen the outrage, and it definitely plays into people's conceptions that the world is an unfair place. And if you are rich, mm-hmm. then you can buy your way into things. And right now, I feel like that's a specifically touchy issue for those on the left, because you look at what's going on in the White House and all these people who are in positions that they so should not have, including, you know, sentences that are coming out that are completely unfair if you look at the crimes, but the fact that it's, you know, a privileged white man who is being right. sentenced and has a low. So this story plays into that so perfectly. So it's especially triggering for people on the left. And I wonder, you know, I asked you that question about, you know, can you identify with this at all as a parent? Because I also wonder how much this plays into the idea that maybe, you know that theory that people are voting against their best interest when it comes to, let's say, tax policy, because right. they think someday I might be rich. Like I don't want to tax the rich,
yes.
because this is America and I could be that guy someday, and I don't want to you know, punish people for their successful bootstrapping.
Future me is going to be mad at current me for bollocksing this up before we got rich.
Right. Now, obviously, I think that, you know, obviously there's so many problems with that. And, you know, the people who are benefiting from the system are not bootstrappers, no matter how much they try to portray themselves in that way. 99% of these, you know, rich people are not, did not get there without privilege and the, you know, the privilege of where they were born and how they were born. So anyway, I do wonder if this is more touchy for people who have a outlook more like you and me, where we feel like the world is definitely an unfair place. Whereas I don't know what people are talking about on the right. I mean, you talk about Fox News, it doesn't have to make sense. Like if they can go after, right, you know, if they can go after Hollywood elites and do, I sure, you know, they will. But from a more practical perspective, just like the people who believe that, like, no, everybody has a chance, like maybe they think, well, if I could help my kid get into school, if I was a really rich person, maybe I would do that too.
Yeah, it is, as we often say on the show, shit be complicated. It's a complicated topic. Another kind of layer to this that I saw a lot yesterday were people of color tweeting about their experience of how people of color assume that any person of color can just automatically get into any university because of affirmative action, and how frustrating that is to carry around. And then I think the well-founded extreme frustration at seeing how rigged the system can be in certain cases. Although this isn't kind of an interesting one, because I honestly don't really think this falls on the colleges and universities. Like, I'm not saying they're perfect places, but I mean, this seems like this was all happening. I mean, with the exception of maybe a couple of bad apples within these organizations, like, this was really like some pretty involved trickeration. You're photoshopping someone's face onto a somebody wrote a tweet that was like, I'm gonna totally mess this part up, but it was like, the premise was, one of these kids who's passed off as a water polo player shows up for the first day of practice, and everyone's looking at him nervously as he tries to enter the pool riding a horse. Just like the idea of the kids trying to do the fake sport and the terrible outcome. Like, you know, anyway, I think that this was not like these institutions trying to let rich people in. It was this guy, if it's all true, it was this guy running these scams where basically the universities thought that they were accepting people that they would normally accept under these various different rules. One other thing I'll say, because this is not so much a power out as a medium power continuance. The other weird layer to this is that people have been doing this shit forever by buying fucking buildings.
Yeah,
and
right.
And endowing chairs.
Right.
Like, it's like the sort of – it's the super rich looking down on the just very rich, because the super rich just buy the hospitals named after them, and then, like, presumably every generation of their family can go to that school, I would assume. And they're looking down on someone who had the who was, you know, I'm not going to call, you know, Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy the underclass here. But it's like, how is what they're doing is just, they didn't have enough money for a hospital building, so they did this other thing. It doesn't make it OK, but it's just weird. Like, did anybody think that these buildings that were named for people were not about trying to buy favors?
Right. Right, yeah. And in a certain way, it's almost like that's more frustrating, right? Maybe you said that, but in a certain way, that it's condoned in that way is more frustrating. When it's built into the system is especially enraging.
Right, it's like if you do it, it's kind of like, and I'm not trying to, it's like why we think of white-collar crime differently, although both of these crimes would have been very white-collar, but it's like if somebody defrauds, you know, a savings and loan or whatever, do those still exist? Is it It's a Wonderful Life? Mm-hmm. Is Ivan Boesky still alive? If someone, like, you know, if there's a white collar crime where an institution is defrauded to the tune of $1 million, we kind of are like, yeah, I don't know. Like, or this whole, I've been obsessed with this Theranos story. Like, did Elizabeth Holmes, was she trying to run a scam or was she just trying to make a business that failed and she was being too hopeful with her projections? If somebody does that, it's like if you steal $10 million through white collar crime, you might go to jail for, well, Paul Manafort currently being sentenced to 90 months. I don't know if that's concurrent with the other sentence or what's the one that's not concurrent? Transubstantiated? I don't know. But like, you know, but then on the other hand, if you go and take a gun or even you don't have a gun, but you just threaten someone on the street and you steal $20, that's, you know, that's robbery. And if you do that a couple times, you could be looking at like life in prison because of three strikes. So it's just weird because the equivalent of this college stuff is if you were to buy a building or donate $5 million to a college, I would be very surprised if your grandkid did not get into that college. Like, it would be shocking. But we don't think of that as being weird. We think of that as being how it works. Mm-hmm. And then we're scandalized by only slightly less rich people trying to do more or less a kind of a version of that. And in fact, in some of the cases, the people asked, can't I just donate a bunch of money? And they were told by this guy, which granted, he had a dog in this fight because he would make more money off of providing his weird services. He said, no, you know, it's too much. Like, you're going to be in the millions of dollars if you want to get your kid in through the traditional means of just donating a building. This will be a cheaper alternative for that. So that was literally part of the conversation with some of these people, according to the indictment.
Yeah, and I agree with you that – or maybe I don't agree with you. I will reiterate what I said, which is that is more infuriating because you look at these people. They did a crime. They got caught. Now we will watch and see what the punishment is. Oh God, why do I keep extending this? We should probably start thinking about moving on. But, you know, you're talking about Lori Loughlin's kids. You know, they're so obnoxious. I actually, like, I was kind of eating some of that up too, but then I felt bad about it. They are kind of kids, although they are adults, I guess. But yeah. I'm just... Though that particular kid who's living the Instagram fire festival seeming lifestyle, you know, it's really easy just to like be so disgusted by the whole thing, and rightfully so. But I don't know the life of all of these kids involved. And I just wonder if some of them are really good kids who maybe didn't know this was going on. Like, none of, like, well, a lot of them are adults, but none of them are listed in the indictment, right? Or am I wrong?
I didn't read the indictment front to back, but I've seen excerpts from it. And one of them, I don't know if this was referring to, if this was a famous parent or a, you know, rich but not famous parent. But a parent in who was swept up in this was saying to this guy, basically, their kid is obsessed with trying to get a certain score on, I think it's the ACT. I didn't take the ACT. I grew up in SAT land. So I don't like have, I don't know a ton about. I think the kid wanted to get, I believe the number was like a 34, which is, I guess, a lot on the ACT. Whatever it was, the kid wanted to get a really high score. And the kid said to the parent, I'm going to keep taking this test until I get this score. Like, the kid was, it sounds like the kid was kind of approaching it from the right angle, which is like, I'm just going to work my butt off. And the parent is telling this scam artist guy, the kid's driving me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the parent wanted to just fast forward to the part where the kid just gets into college because the parent – well, the parent had did not think the kid was going to get the high score. Tommy is a little – Tommy's not as smart as Tommy thinks he is. Like, you know, but
– I'll always think of your – this has nothing to do. I'm sorry. But one of the funniest things you ever – I think you just texted it to the gang, but you were just like, nobody tell Kyle Seeger he's not fast. And like that always sticks in
yeah,
my head.
Yeah, because he tried to score on a yes. Like an infield hit, and it was just like he got thrown out by 40 feet.
But it was also somewhat lovely because he was pulling off a lot of that shit too. And it was like, all right, Kyle Seeger thinks he's fast, and this is so
fun
right. to
no,
watch.
You know what? You're right. He had scored. Sorry,
yeah, no,
he
I
wasn't
think he actually
out.
Was doing – like he had a few games in a row
yes,
where he was just
but
like,
it was just like,
what? Who told this guy he's fast? Nobody tell
despite,
him the truth.
Yeah, you're totally right. Despite all physical limitations, he was somehow, you know, legging it out and extending hits in a way that was kind of crazy.
Anyway.
But, yeah. So in that particular case, in that particular little excerpt from the indictment, it kind of sounded like the kid wasn't actually in on it on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, but that, and you know what? Like, this is a weird way to end this, but it, this has to end. This must end.
Mm-hmm.
And I, people might be like, what are you trying to like humanize or create empathy for these rich ass kids? But one thing that I have been trying to really think about in my own life and address in my own life is this deep seated feeling I have that if somebody grew up with money, or, you know, if somebody didn't have to worry about money, then they have nothing to complain about ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be honest, when I look at Lori Loughlin's daughter, Olivia Jade, I think that she is the poster child for that. She is traditionally beautiful. She grew up wealthy. She does not present on, you know, video as a person who I would have a lot to talk about with. It's very easy for me to just have the lowest possible opinion of her. But I don't know her life. And this doesn't mean that she should get to go to USC. She's probably as relieved as anyone. She's like, good, I get to stop pretend going to USC. Cool. But, like, I don't know her life. Her parents could be shitty. She could feel really bad about herself. She could be a sad person, or she could be an insecure person. And she probably is, because we all are. Like, at the end of the day, nobody knows anybody else's life. And for me, it's very easy when I think somebody had it easier than me and was rich to just be like, they suck. And their life is perfect, and they have no right to ever complain or whatever. And the truth of the matter is, of course, I don't know their life. And there are many people who are rich and famous who end their own lives because they're deeply unhappy. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I guess at the end of all of this, I don't really know any of these people's experience. And so maybe it's useful for me to create this, like, not to the question of their guilt or not. It appears, if the government's case is correct, they appear pretty guilty. But just as far as, like, thinking they're a worthless piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should dial that one back a little bit.
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm trying to do and think about and have that mindset in a lot of different things that we come across. That, you just don't know what's going on in somebody's life. And it's just so easy to disregard people completely out of hand. Like these tweets and these Instagram. And that's also not to say that everybody's an angel either, or that we have to like love people who apparently seem like they are, I mean, just like privilege personified and like a completely.
Right.
But all right, privilege is one thing, but totally blind to it and, you know, all of the trappings of that. I don't know, man. There are people who are like that, and there are awful, awful people out there. But yeah, I guess I'm just it doesn't make for great podcasting, but I'm also trying to do what you just said too, which is, you know, to kind of take a step back and not be like just throwing Molotov cocktails from afar at people who I know I literally didn't even know existed until this headline came out. And just for the record, because I feel like I'm not going to lie to you, and this is actually a pretty irritating thing to admit, I am kind of obsessed over making this Photoshop right now. I'm having a good time doing it, and so I feel like I'm even less articulate.
Okay, but let
than
me
usual.
Talk to you about that really quick. Because okay. You made me – I just got the picture. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But we know that in the – and this is extremely relevant. We know that in the parlance of Full House – but I am not the tall one.
Oh, yeah,
you are
that's
taller
a good
than
point.
Me.
It
but
doesn't.
In this picture, I'm towering over you, and I just feel like that's. I am fine with you photoshopping my head onto a 1960s tennis player, but I cannot be a foot taller than you. That strains credulity.
Well, I'm not changing it because as you were saying those, I sent you
have
an early
a
version.
Picture of your face?
Yes.
Okay, I want to see. Can
so,
you send me the
dear
updated
listener,
one?
What I sent Luke was just, it was mid Photoshop. So it was just like, you know, it's two tennis players. It's an old black and white photo, I think from the 40s. And I had put Luke's head on one, but I hadn't put my head on the other yet. And you're right. I hadn't thought of the height thing. I was just going by like position of the guys in the
okay
photo. And now you're right. Now I've put my high school photo on this other guy. And the fact that you are towering over me is hilarious. I actually, this is
will
probably
you please send it to
my best work. Yes.
Now, let me ask you this question. This, my immediate thought when I saw the picture was, this would be a funny spoof on Twitter, but it's not my spoof to make because you're the one that made the picture. So will you please spoof this on Twitter in some way?
Well, what I'll do
just
is I made
it to be spoofed.
I'm going to make this the show pick, and then I will tweet it out as a TBTL tweet. That way we both get credit for it.
Thank you. Okay, good. Okay, well, I'm still waiting. Okay. I'm still awaiting the final version, but I have to say I'm very much enjoying the first pass at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's good stuff.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right. I have still, Andrew, sorry, I know that this is your segment, but I also know that you're tied up with doing some important Photoshop work. So I have continued to receive messages day and night about the status of my dryer, which I don't know if it's interesting for the listeners, but it's been quite fascinating for me. But I feel like I need to clarify something. Okay, so I got an email from listener Justin. And Justin said, I'm pretty sure I have this. And if you're a new listener to the show, what are you doing here? But if you're a new listener to the show and you didn't hear the run-up to this, our dryer seems to be emitting or creating, for some reason, a weird smell. And it's not, and we bought a new dryer to try to fix this, and the new dryer also creates the smell, so it's not the physical dryer. And it's not the water that the clothes are being washed with, because sometimes we will throw our dog's blanket that just has some fur on it into the dryer. I'm mentioning that, which has no water, it's just dry. I'm mentioning that because that's specific to Justin's email. I'm pretty sure I have this odoriferous mystery figured out. I can't believe you haven't figured out yet, as the answer is right under your nose. Pause for laughs. Luke, what is the one thing you're doing with your dryer that other people aren't? You are putting dry and dirty dog bedding in it without washing it first. Yes, you're getting the hair out, but you're also heating up that dog funk and blasting it all over your dryer and through the vent. When you then put your clean, wet clothes in the dryer, you're now activating the funky pet odors with moisture and heat. Now, I have to clarify, Justin, and I know that, like, listening to TBTL and, you know, trying to help me, it's like poker. You're playing a game with incomplete information, and that's my fault. We're not putting a dog bed in the dryer. It's like a blanket that I will put the blanket on my lap when I'm watching TV. Like, it is a brand new relatively new synthetic, like, I don't know what you'd call it, almost like fake plush kind of. It's not what I need to be clear about is this is not a tattered old flannel animal blanket that the dog birthed puppies on that's being thrown into the dryer. It is like a thing that's been on my lap that then the dog jumps on top of, and that, like, every day or two, the dog, who does not actually stink, I'll tell you the one good thing about this dog, and it's the one good thing, for all her shedding, she doesn't have a body odor, which is, I guess, the trade-off. Did you know about this, Andrew?
No, this is specific to labs?
I think it is the difference between dogs that have fur and dogs that have hair. If dogs have hair, they don't shed, but they're more prone to, like, smells and sebaceous, you know, oil issues and stuff, because they have hair. It doesn't fall out, but it does something. Whereas fur is kind of annoying because it sheds everywhere, but their dogs that have fur are less prone to smelling. And Rudy, to her credit, does not really smell, like unless she's been wallowing in mud or something, which is, you know, not that typical. So in other words, I want to be clear, and I'm not just saying this to be defensive, but I just want people to have the right picture in their mind of what we're throwing in the dryer. It's not some super beat to shit fur-covered dog bed that the dog's been sleeping on for months. It's a blanket that the dog has rested upon for, like, 2 hours, one or two nights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally a matter of, like, letting the static in the dryer charge up the blanket and pull the fur off of it. So I don't think that's what's going on. But Justin, in Belmont, California, the Bay City, as he lists it, I understand why you would think that based on how I described it. I just needed to clarify that's what's going on.
Yeah. I saw that too. And I think that we've the only reason I didn't bring that up is because I think that we had addressed that theory already. And yeah, cats, not notoriously smelly animals, but I will say for whatever it's worth that I do the same thing. In fact, it sounds like we let our cat blanket get much hairier. I will maybe throw that in the dryer once every 2 weeks or something when I can't stand looking at it anymore. By the way, how long do you let that thing tumble in the dryer? Because I gotta say, I have one. This is where doing that podcast with Hannah is getting in my head, and her mom's always calling into the show. And her mom is a very kind of thrifty and kind of conservative person when it comes to wasting water or energy or anything like that. And so they're in my head a little bit now. I'm taking this blanket, I'm throwing it in the dryer, and I don't know how long to set it to. I don't want to like waste tons of energy by setting it for like 45 minutes if it only needs to be in there for 10 minutes.
Right, and then the question, I'm still not actually very good at this because there's the question of heat or just, are you just tumbling it?
Yeah, I take like, the I don't heat know if the off heat as much as possible.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The H is O, the heat is off.
Mm-hmm.
To Justin's point, it's about static. Sometimes it seems like it works better than other times because the other weird part is, believe it or not, because the blanket is Rudy's almost exact fur color, I kind of can't see the fur on the blanket. The way I gauge if it's working is I look in the lint trap, and it feels like sometimes if the lint trap is like full of fur, I'm like, yes, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's less fur, but so either I didn't put it on the right time or the heat was wrong or something. I don't know. I'm pretty bad at this considering I do it about once every couple days.
Mm-hmm. I think I let it go too long. I'm a waster. I waste things. I am trying to get better, though. No joke. I'm really trying to not waste things as much.
What do you mean waster? Like you're wasting energy? You're wasting
everything. Like I'm getting better on paper towels, but I used to go through a roll of paper towels about once an hour. Like everything was just like,
dude,
I solved
so
everything
with
paper towels, and now I'm trying. We got some new towel. I had this whole thing where I don't even want to get into this. I had this whole thing where we had one set of kitchen towels that are kind of like dish towels, but if I were living alone, I would kind of know my routine. I would take a clean dish towel out. I would start its life out of the cupboard as a dish drying towel. As it kind of got wetter, I would demote it to kind of a counter towel where I'm just wiping up spills with it, whatever. And I could kind of keep – and then maybe I'd bring out a new clean towel, and that one is now promoted to the dish towel because I don't want to be wiping up a counter and then drying dishes. In my head, I can keep those two towels straight, but – Genevieve doesn't know which towel I've designated the clean one and which one is the dirty one. And so I am
the clean one.
So I would use paper towels for everything except for drying dishes, essentially. And I was just wasting so many paper towels. I mean, for years and years and years, I just paper toweled everything. And now we kind of consciously went out. Genevieve picked out a new set of towels for us that are just going to be for drying dishes. If we see this style towel, it means it's a dish towel. Don't dry anything with it but the dishes. And then all of the older towels you see, those are our counter rags. And so now I'm using counter rags way more than paper towels, and I've cut back on my paper towel usage considerably. So that was a really long, boring story, but that's what I mean when I say to be better about like not just like burning, just destroying the environment for very small little tasks that I have to do constantly.
I have to start doing that because we have the same kind of a similar issue, which is we have two dish towels that are always in rotation. I mean, there might be multiple like versions or that, you know, I mean, I think we have more than two towels, but there's always one that is hanging from the door to where the garbage can is under the sink. And that one is like for, I just washed my hands in the kitchen sink and now I'm going to dry my hands on this towel. And sometimes if I have like food on my hand and it gets on that towel, Rudy will lick that towel. Then there's another, that one never touches the dishes, that's just for like your hands. Then there's one that sits to the right of the sink, and what we do is we don't dry dishes anymore in our family for some weird reason. One, we use the dishwasher, and two, I will spread that towel out and then I will wash dishes and I will just place the dishes on that towel. We also have a drying rack, and I'll just let the stuff dry. Because the number of things that don't go in the dishwasher, it's pretty it's actually a pretty small number of things. It'll be some pots and pans after we make dinner or whatever. So I haven't dried dishes in a long time. But I will tell you that we have a lot of counter space, like a lot of countertop in our kitchen. You've been in there. And it's, you know, it gets dirty and there's little whatever coffee cup rings and things. So I'm always, and let's be honest, Carrie, even more than me, is always, you know, cleaning it and doing stuff. And I just like go nuts with the paper towels. And then like if I clean the toilet, which is fairly rare, I don't want to touch that shit.
No, literally. That's, yeah, you definitely need disposables.
So then I get paper towels. But I'm with you, like, I've watched a paper towel roll diminish over the course of like one cleaning session to a troubling at a troubling rate. And I'm just like, oh God. Like meanwhile you go to my sister Liz's house, I don't think a friggin' paper towel's ever entered the building.
Yeah, right.
It's like, and every towel is some kind of like she's wove it out of some shit and it like works great. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you cleaning? Oh, I don't know. I just made this out of yak tears. And it's really, you know, it's microbial. So it doesn't get, you know, it's antimicrobial. It's just like, yeah, okay. Well, between the two of us, each household averages the amount of paper towel usage that should occur. But it's just double at our house and zero at your house.
I just looked it up here, and they actually do sell a yak tier cleaner at grove.co/TBTL.
Hey, all right. Shout out to sponsor Grove.
Yes. I've sent you the – I have some voicemails. We can play them tomorrow. The finished product of the photo job. What do you think? Is it believable? Oh, do we look like tennis players from the – are you willing to take to the court
it's
with
so
me?
Good. Oh my! It would be my honor.
Hey, actually, have you ever played tennis?
Yes,
I have a dream of playing. I've never played,
dude,
even screwed around on the tennis court ever in my life, and I always see it. And I like, listen, I know I'm not in good shape, and I know that this is a very athletic sport, but I need to find a sport that is like fun for me. The way you play basketball, it's like it's exercise, but it's also just like fun. And I was playing squash a little bit, like 15 years ago when we were in Concord Vives, and I got into squash a little bit at the Y. I liked that, but I haven't had anything like that. And every time I'm on vacation and I see a tennis court, I'm like, who is going to be the person who gets me on a tennis court? Because I wouldn't even know where to begin right now.
I would love to make this Photoshop picture a reality, Andrew. And I used to play a lot of tennis in high school, not on the team, but just me and the recently frequently mentioned Peter Williams. We used to go play tennis all the time at Green Lake, and I am probably the exact right skill level for you, which is I'm not very good. I'm not a serious like Carrie played tennis in high school.
Oh yeah, I'm not doing it with her.
And is actually pretty good at tennis. But I can like we could hit the ball back and forth. And you're exactly right. If our goal is to just try to hit the ball across the net to each other, like it's a rally. We're not trying to score on each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's very doable and it's fun and it's very it's all of the things you're hoping it will be. So I would love to we'll play some tennis at Green Lake, you and me.
It's essentially like table tennis, right?
It's exactly like table tennis with a bigger table.
Okay.
In fact, that's what they originally called tennis. They were like,
good.
Hey, you guys, you know ping pong? Let's do it bigger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, I'm all for it. So we'll figure out a way to do that. You said Green Lake. Is there one at Green Lake? I didn't know that. I didn't know there's a tennis court at Green Lake.
Well, that was the one that I always played at.
Oh, I didn't know it existed.
Yeah,
that's
there are good. There are a few of them. The one that we played at was this like section of Green Lake where a bunch of our athletic endeavors would take place. So we would hit the baseball, you know, like one person would have the bat and the ball and one person would have a mitt and stand really far away and we would just hit the ball to each other, try to catch it. And then just down the way was these tennis courts that half the time are covered in pine needles, but we didn't care. We had those wood rackets. Like, first time I played with like an actual like updated racket, I was like, oh my God, this is so much easier. Because like those wood rackets, you got to really get it on the right spot for the ball to do what you're trying to do with it. So, but yeah, no, I would be really fun. I would love to do that.
All right. Sounds good. It's a plan. We'll do that. In the meantime, I will take this Photoshop to the people and I will let them
them decide whether or not I have a future either as a tennis player or as a Photoshop wizard.
Dude, you definitely have a future as a Photoshop wiz.
Okay,
that
that'll
is,
be my fault.
I'm going to send this as soon as we're done. I'm going to send the actually, I'm not. I said I was going to send the picture to Carrie. I don't. I want to be in the room with her when she sees it, and she's actually out right now. So, like, I'm waiting. That's how good this picture is I can't not be in the same room with the person who's looking at it.
Okay, good. All
it's
right.
Really good.
And I really am proud of our show title, the Fighting TBDs. I have a feeling that if a year from now I'm looking back at the best titles of 2019, I feel like that's got to make some kind of a list, the Fighting TBDs. And
yeah. Also, props to the kid who we started the show with. Can you believe that it never occurred to me that, like, TBTL is very close to BLT?
Oh yeah, Rock, who started the show for us, right?
I never did. I 2,856 shows. It never really occurred to me, and it took an 11-year-old listener, Rock or Rocco, to. A Rockwell?
I think it was Rockwell.
Is the kid really?
Yeah, in the email that it was attached to, I believe his parents said he goes by Rock. But do you want to hear it again?
Well, is he named for the singer Rockwell who did the song "I Always Feel Like Somebody's Watching Me"? And can we go out with that song in honor of Rockwell?
That is, you know, let's do that. Because I was going through like all these Fugazi songs. I'm like, which one can maybe make the cut? But no. This is so much. This is such a better idea. Somebody's watching me. Although this is a creepy song. Did you like this? Have we ever had this conversation?
It's a creepy song, but I like the music, if that makes any sense. Like, the message is kind of creepy, but the actual, like, production and the musicianship in the song, I like. Do you not like it? We don't have to play it.
No, it's fine. Why is it a Michael Jackson song? I feel like we've had this conversation before, but when I look this song up, it puts it on a Michael Jackson album called Scream. Did he write it?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, now, see, this is... So Rockwell is the artist who I always knew of as the person who recorded it, but is Michael Jackson actually singing the "I Always Feel Like Somebody's Watching Me" part? Is he singing the chorus?
I wonder.
Wait a sec. First, I want to see. I think Carrie's here. I want to get her in here and get her reaction to our picture.
Okay. All right.
Hey, babe. Can you come here a sec? We're still doing the show, but I just want to get your reaction to this picture that Andrew made for the show pick today to help me and him get into a fancy college. What do you think? She has a quiet laugh.
All right, yeah,
but
no,
I'm going to
no.
be honest with you.
I feel validated.
I have not seen her laugh that much at anything in maybe our whole relationship. She's literally like tearing up.
All right.
At it.
Well, then we can start the application process there, I guess.
Okay. All right. Wait, what do we decide about Rockwell?
I'm looking it up because I was curious about it. Somebody's Watching Me is a song recorded by American singer Rockwell, released by the Motown label on January 4th, 1984. It's the lead single from his debut studio album of the same name. The song features guest vocals by brothers Michael Jackson in the chorus and Jermaine additional backing vocals. So maybe just with everything that's going on right now, Let's not play Michael Jackson's voice.
Back
right
to
now.
Fugazi. Back to the uncontroversial choice of Fugazi.
By the way, I guess I made it clear before. I really
okay,
do
can
like
we play,
Fugazi.
How about this?
Mm-hmm.
Can we play the clean version of the future song that references Fugazi? Or
Let's
Fugazi.
Give it a shot. Yeah, I don't know future.
I have to find the exact title. Hold on. I'm getting there. Apologize.
This show kind of, and I blame myself because I got real distracted by the end with my little visual project. So I feel like this show definitely is kind of unraveling here.
This song is called First Off, featuring Travis Scott.
Okay.
Is there a clean version of First Off?
Let me see here. Hold on. It's not over yet. Yeah, there's something on Swagged Out Neeb YouTube channel.
Oh, sure.
that's claims my channel. This is a clean version, but I don't know the song.
All right, cool.
So let's hope this is good.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I think he's going to say the Fugazi here.
First off, you get the ammo, then you cock it. First off, we had this blast up like a rocket. I put a paddock water on, but I got options. PJ taking off and I ain't stopping, nah. Louis V belts, Louis V on my walls. Fish scared, I can't f*** with no law. Never Ferris on my land, I see Fugazi.
Hey!
I should have peeled this
b- hey, we got that!
What do you think about Future? Do you listen to Future very much?
I don't. I think I should, though. I mean, what a huge blank spot in my cultural references.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. I think it was a fun show, Andrew, and I think this is just the beginning of an amazing tennis and really collegiate career for you and me. Your body looks so buff in this photo.
I know, I'm feeling good about it. I gave myself the buff.
You just look like you're just like a spark plug, man. It's so great. All right, thanks everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, please remember to mount too tall.
And good luck to all.
He let off for the shots, he can't get no bun. Clothes on, he shot when he killed him, he young. They ever get caught snitching, they gon' cut off your tongue. I can't wait till they set the rat up, yeah. I was catching drugs, now I'm a millionaire. I get the rap check and I avoid the paps. I get NBA money, they ain't been in the traps. Yeah, I'm back on the fourth, crazy.
Power out.